Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we focus on a very important but very overlooked responsibility of dog ownership. What happens if for any reason you can't look after your dog yourself, long-term or short-term? We have expert advice from Dawn Antoniak-Mitchell.
There's some really simple things that everybody can do. Everybody can do, no matter where you are. Starting just with simply writing a biography of your pet.
We also have the Dogcast Radio News.
And on the subject of winning dogs, the four-legged stars of Oscar-winning film The Queen have taken top honours in London at Britain's first Fido Film Awards for canine cinematic excellence.
Jenny brings us puppy playtime.
Today I have some great websites for you to explore.
And first up we have... Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. I know that my people have done some things I consider pretty strange in the past, but they did something recently that was absolutely crazy. I'll tell the story from the start and see what you think. It all began one Saturday morning in September. There had been large boxes in the dining room for a few days. They were covered in a sheet, and any time I got my nose under the sheet to sniff the many interesting scents on the boxes, I was hewed out and the door tightly shut. On the Saturday morning in question, the boxes were dragged out into the garden. My tall male person had this "I've got a job to do" air about him, and I realised the day was not going to go how I wanted. It was a lovely early autumn day, but still with the bright sunshine of late summer. Just the kind of day a dog can happily spend snuffling through fallen leaves and then sit with his family as they lunch al fresco. But no, clearly it was not to be. My tall and short female people came out to the garden, and the shorter one was so excited he was dancing about and squealing. I danced about and barked too, to show I was a good member of the pack and wanted to be involved, but I really couldn't see what the fuss was about. There was a pile of poles, lots of metal, and some cloth bits. What a fuss about nothing. I made the best of things and trotted round, sniffing here and there. Occasionally, I tried to help by lightening the mood. I grabbed a hammer or other tool and ran off with it, hoping my people would give chase, but all I got was a weary, "Oh, buddy," leaving me with no option but to slink back and replace the item. Then an awful thing struck me. What if my people were working so hard to build a kennel? It was such a dreadful thought I had to sit down for a bit. A kennel. I've heard that some dogs don't live in the house with their humans. They live in a little house of their own, all on their own, alone, by themselves, lonely and cold outside. Now I watched with worry as they bustled about, attaching this metal tube to that one, and then fetching others as the structure gradually grew larger. I had to admit it would be a kennel to be proud of, roomy and spacious. It was obviously going to be big enough for all three of us dogs. I began to imagine how my life would be from now on, having to live banished to a kennel. No chance to nudge a hand or lean on a leg and get some fuss. No chance to fix my soulful eyes on a face and win some tasty leftovers. No chance to jump onto the sofa and snuggle up close to my people. No chance to wait quietly by the side of the bed for them to wake up and give me that lovely first thing in the morning greeting. No chance to be a real part of the family. Oh, I couldn't bear to think about it anymore. But then there was a development. My people grabbed a large grey piece of material and carried it over to the circular network of metal pipes, and they attached it using lots and lots of springs. You'll never guess what they did next. They climbed up and jumped up and down on the material. It obviously wasn't a kennel, thank goodness, but what was it? I stood and watched them jumping and squealing, and they made such a noise and jumped so violently that at first I thought they were attacking the thing. After a while, I realised they were enjoying it. Although it was odd behaviour, it looked such fun, I was drawn closer. Up and down they went. I decided I wanted to go. I jumped my front paws onto the edge of the new thing and launched myself. It almost worked. My tummy rose up against the side bar, but then my back leg swung under the bar, sending me falling backwards, landing in a sprawling heap on the floor. This caused even more laughter than all the jumping. After that, they put up tall poles and tied a big black net around the thing that I gathered is called a trampoline. That put pay to any efforts of mine to get onto the jumping area, so now I am confined to sitting as near as possible while they jump and giggle and chat. I'm quite glad on reflection I didn't make it all the way on. The way my people carry on, it's obviously difficult enough to trampoline with only two legs. Just think what a mess I could get into with four. Till next time.
It's a subject many of us don't like to think about. But what would happen to our dogs if anything happened to us? We need to plan for our dogs in the case of our death. But also, what about if you were incapacitated short-term in some way? Dawn Antoniak-Mitchell, who co-owns the Bonafide Dog Academy, has some excellent advice on the subject, because her talents aren't confined to dog training.
As well as doing all this training and having five dogs, you're an attorney, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
I much more enjoy being the dog trainer than the lawyer. I have to admit that. I like my clients much better on this side, but yes, I am.
Yeah.
I am a lawyer.
Yeah. So we're going to talk today sort of about an area that obviously is quite a difficult area for many reasons to think about, and one that most of us don't know much about, and it's estate planning with your dog in mind. So what advice do you have for us on this?
Right, and this applies to any animal that anyone has. Estate planning in general, preparing for our own death, what is going to happen after our death, that's not a comfortable topic really for the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
And for almost everyone, if they get to that point in the conversation, which I personally believe everyone should do it sooner rather than later, they tend to think about their children, obviously, dependent people, that type of thing, but they often forget about their pets.
Yes.
Their pets fall through the cracks, and that can lead to some very, very unfortunate, unpleasant situations that happen just because people assume, well, something happened to me. My neighbor likes my dog.
Mm.
He'll take care of it.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is the neighbor only likes the dog because he's being nice to you.
Yeah.
Or the neighbor can't take the dog. Or, you think a family member would just automatically step up and take that animal.
Mm.
But in a time of trauma, even a well-intentioned family member may be so upset.
Yeah.
That they don't step in and they don't fill that gap. So one of the best things we can do for our pets is to sit down and think through, what do I want to have happen in the event that I cannot care for my animal?
Mm.
Whether that's a short-term incapacity, say you're put in the hospital, or, and you have a long recovery, or that you are actually perhaps killed in an accident.
Mm.
What do I want to have happen to my animals? And then how can I best guarantee that my wishes are going to be followed through with?
Mm.
And unfortunately, at least here in the United States, our laws are slowly, slowly changing, but we're far behind British common law.
Mm.
We still treat animals as property.
Mm.
My cat is really no different in the eyes of the law than my car. They're not recognized as creatures that can own property. So, for example, you can't, in your will, say, I leave $5,000 to my cat, Fluffy.
Hmm.
Courts won't uphold that. Just like you couldn't say, I leave $5,000 to my 2005 Ford Mustang car. The same thing.
Yeah.
So we don't recognize. We're just slowly turning the corner and starting to recognize that although animals may not be recognized as humans at the same level that humans are in the eyes of the law, they still need to be above, you know, personal property. They need to be treated better than a car. And so a lot of states have enacted statutes now that allow us to create pet trusts so we can leave money for the care of our animals. And obviously that varies not only from state to state here in the United States, but it varies, you know, everywhere across the world. Mm. But there are lots of ways, at the very least, even without an attorney, that you can take some steps to try to take care of your pets as best you can when you're no longer here or no longer able to. But it really does require thinking about, you know, unpleasant situations. So a lot of people kind of avoid that. Mm. And, you know, here in the U.S., they show that, well, first of all, only 12 to 27% of the people who have wills in the first place make any provisions for the care of their pets in those wills. Mm. And only 2% of the pet-owning population here has specific provisions leaving any kind of money or anything for the care of their pets. So really, it's not on most people's radar, but it, in my opinion, should be.
Yes.
And it certainly can be, even if you don't have a lot of money to leave. Just going through the process of really establishing who is going to take care of my animal, who will either take it and give it a lifelong home, or who will assume responsibility to find it a home in the event that I can't. That right there is a great gift, and that's a gift you don't need an attorney to do. So I really like to emphasize, you know, that aspect of estate planning to people in the seminars. It's like, even if you don't want to go this step, even if you can't afford an attorney, or for whatever reason you don't want to go that far, you can still do some really great steps to help take care of that pet.
Yeah.
And almost everybody needs to do it. They, you know, you don't think about it, but, you know, if you have people, if you live alone, if you're older, you know, if you have a chronic illness, if you travel a lot, I've unfortunately lost many friends over the years in car accidents going back and forth to dog shows. You know, those things happen, and we don't like to think about it, but they happen. So people who travel a lot, you're increasing your risks of something happening. People who own a lot of pets, or people who own pets with special needs. You know, these are the folks that really need to be thinking about it. And you can get this, you know, set up fairly easily, because if you don't make plans, your animals may suffer. They may die. If no one knows they're in your house, for example, if no one knows you well enough to know that you have four or five animals, or even one animal in your home, it's going to be a while before anyone realizes that. If you don't make provisions. And in that time, that animal is going to suffer. And if certain, at least here in the United States, if you die without a will, if you die intestate, there are laws that pass that determine who gets your property. Well, your pets are considered personal property, so the same person that's going to get your car is probably the same person that's going to get your cat or your dog, whether or not they want it. So that person may end up with a pet, and they say, well, golly gee, I don't want this dog, so off to the Humane Society with us. You know, and then the animal is just, it's tossed to the Humane Society, where it may or may not be placed in a home, maybe euthanized, just simply because there's not enough room to keep it. And if you don't have provisions, you haven't made plans, it still may, the dog still may end up in the wrong hands. And if you're incapacitated, if you don't have what we call a power of attorney that allows someone to, for example, go write a check out of your checking account to buy dog food, or go buy, you know, medicine if you have a pet that needs medicine. If you don't have someone who can do that in the event that you're still alive but you can't do it yourself, then again, you're relying on the generosity and the ability of someone who cares to do that. And your friends may have great hearts, but they may not have great pocketbooks.
Yes. Yeah.
So, again, there's many, many ways that we can let our animals down if we don't have a plan in place. And the time to do that is well before you ever need it.
Yes. Yeah.
Not under the trauma of some horrible event.
Mm.
But there's some really simple things that everybody can do. Everybody can do, no matter where you are.
Mm-hmm.
And starting just with simply writing a biography of your pet.
Mm.
Put down on paper your pet's name, age, color. If it's an animal that's registered with, you know, some type of registration body, the kennel club or whatever, that kind of information. Things that your pet likes. What does your pet eat? You know, does it have fears that someone would need to know about? For example, is it shy of men?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it's basically the story of your pet. And then take a picture, snap some photos, clip those with them.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if you have two black cats, at one point I owned two black Manx cats.
Mm.
I certainly knew them apart, but, you know, someone else walking in, it's a black Manx is a black Manx is a black Manx, and one of them needed medication, the other one didn't.
Mm.
So I had to be very creative, and basically one of my cats liked toys, one of them didn't.
Yeah.
You could figure out pretty quickly which was which if you really didn't know. And then the photos, there was some differences in the eye color and that type of thing.
Mm.
So, you know, writing that information down, sticking a couple of photos, and then, now that you've got the information, you got to make sure that people can find it.
Yeah.
People who need to know can find it. So you can, I always tell people, you know, not only put it on your computer, that's wonderful, but emergency personnel, for example, if you fell down, you live alone, and you fell down and they came and they took you to the hospital, those emergency personnel aren't going to necessarily go and look on your computer to find out if you have information about your pet.
No, no.
But if you have a paper copy of that information, you can post that in a very easy-to-find spot. And to make it even easier to find, you can take stickers. Nowadays, you can buy sticker material that you can run through your computer printer, so you can make your own stickers.
Mm.
And you can make a sticker that you put on your front and your back door that says, you know, emergency personnel, I have animals in the house, and, you know, emergency contact information is located,
yeah.
And then fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Maybe it's on the top of the refrigerator. You know, stick a file up on the top of the refrigerator. You can put a magnet, because you can also get magnets. You can make your own magnets now.
Mm.
They sell that stuff to fit through a printer. Make a magnet. Stick it on your refrigerator.
Yeah.
Again, you know, emergency contact information can be found. And then tell them where that paper copy is.
Yeah.
And then make more paper copies and give those paper copies to your short-term caretakers. Because everybody should have someone who's willing to step up if you're in a car accident. Even if you're just off your feet for a few days.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's say you get in a car accident, you break your leg, and you're in the hospital for 4 or 5 days.
Mm.
You should have someone that you can call up and say, can you please go over and take care of my dogs? You know, I'm gonna be out of the hospital in a few days, but somebody needs to take care of them.
Yeah.
Those are the people then that you should be giving a paper copy of all this information to as well. Because unfortunately, dogs get away from people, you know, things like that can happen, and you want the person caring for your animal to have that information.
Mm.
So just by sitting down, consolidating that information, getting some pictures together, putting it in a place where people can find it, that right there is going to go a long, long way toward making sure if you're not in that home to care for your animals, someone can get in and someone will know how to care for them,
yeah.
At least for the short term.
Mm.
And then obviously, you know, those people have to have access to your home and stuff. But that's a very simple thing to do. Very simple thing. And the other thing is putting something, when you travel, put something in your wallet. Right alongside, you know, listing who in a human terms, should be contacted for you personally, mm-hmm. who also should be contacted for your animals, that at home I have animals, please contact this person in the event that I'm unable to do so.
Yeah.
So if you're in a car accident out of town, you know, you can put your name, your address, your city, you know, enough information that you can be anywhere and somebody can pick up that card and know who to call.
Yeah.
First for yourself and then for your animals. So putting your animals in that emergency wallet card is also very important.
Yeah.
And then if you travel with your dogs and you carry them in travel crates, you know, a confinement, put a card on that. Put a card on that in case you're hurt and you can't say anything to, you know, the rescue people.
Yeah.
There's a card on there that says, please take my animal to the nearest vet or the nearest boarding kennel. I will guarantee payment in the event I can't pay. This person will guarantee payment. This person will guarantee payment, and on and on.
Mm.
Because that way, the emergency people, they're mostly good-hearted people. I grew up, my father was a career firefighter, and these guys have very big hearts.
Yeah.
But most of them don't have big wallets.
No.
So to take an animal and that maybe needs some emergency vet care, to take that animal in on their own, then they're obligated for it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them can't afford to do that.
No.
But if you have, you know, that I will guarantee this information, don't put your credit card number or anything on it, but just say, I'll guarantee this payment, and you can call this person to get payment guarantee, you know, someone other than yourself, that ups the chances that your dog's going to be taken care of, your pet's going to be taken care of if you can't, if you're out traveling.
Yeah.
So, again, a very simple thing, an index card taped to the top of the travel crate.
Mm.
You know, a little index card, it can be handwritten, doesn't have to be fancy. Slip it in your wallet.
Yeah.
You know, make a little note, put it on your refrigerator, and then have that paper information. That right there is a free, easy thing you can do to help your pet.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you're to take that one step further then, to find a permanent caretaker in the event something were to happen, you need to locate a couple of people who really, truly are willing and able to take care of your animals. And there are so many people that have big, big hearts, and they'll say, yes, I will do it, I want to do it, you know, you're my friend, you're my relative, whatever. But the reality is, you know, they can't afford to do it without financial help, perhaps, or maybe their living situation, if they're in a small apartment, and you own a Mastiff, that might not really be that realistic.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what the good intentions are of that person, that might not be the best match. My border collie that I own would definitely have to go into a home, and I have arrangements in that event, a very high-energy home, so to speak, that can handle living with the energy of a border collie.
Yeah.
That's a very different home than I would look for my curly-coated retrievers, who really, they're just absolutely happy laying on the couch all day, you know, so they're much more low-key. So you need to think about who fits your animal and who really could care for them at least long enough and is willing to take the time to find a good home for them if they can't keep them.
Yeah.
So you always need to think not only about their willingness, but their ability, and then sit down, have your pet and your caretaker get together. If this isn't someone that the dog or the cat sees on a regular basis, or the bird or the horse, any animal, if they don't see this potential caretaker on a regular basis, you should see them. You know, invite the person over. Say, hey, you know what? Let's just spend some time with the animal.
Yeah.
And then watch the person. If the person is very hesitant to touch the dog, or, you know, spend its whole time brushing cat hair off their pants because the cat brushed against them, then you might realize, again, it's a good heart, but not a good fit.
Yeah.
And then you might want to find someone else. But, you know, and see how the animal reacts.
Mm-hmm.
And if the animal seems comfortable, the person seems comfortable, then it's time to get a little more serious about formalizing the arrangement. And with that, no matter who it is, I have written arrangements with my sister, with one of my best friends. And these are people I trust completely. Mm. But putting it in writing is always best.
Yes.
Because you have to remember that the person that's dealing with this situation, they're going to be, that's someone who's going to be traumatized by what's happened to you.
Yes.
And people react differently in times of trauma. So putting it in writing is not necessarily so much that, you know, I don't trust you, so I'm going to make, you know, you write it down. It's actually a gift to them because they can pick up that paper and read it. They don't have to remember. You know, they don't have to worry about, well, did she tell me this or did she tell me that to do? It's there. It's in writing. That person can refer to it over and over again.
Yeah.
So it's actually a gift. Mm. It's a gift to them. So put the arrangements down in writing that, you know, Tommy says he's going to take the border collie.
Yeah.
And, you know, Susie has agreed to take the cat, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And when you talk to these people, you need to talk money, which is very uncomfortable for most people.
Mm.
But if you have a young animal that has a long lifespan, I mean, my gosh, parrots. If you have a parrot, you know, that's 75, 80 years of commitment over the lifetime of a parrot.
Yeah.
That's a long time, that adds up in birdseed. So, you know, you have to sit down and talk money. What if something were to happen to my animal and he needs, you know, a little extra veterinary care? Or what if he needs medications over his lifetime? Can this person realistically afford it? As best you can tell, no one has a crystal ball, but you know, can this person take care of it? And if they can, and they're willing to, that's great.
Mm.
But if they can't, they're really willing to, you know they're a really good fit, but they can't take care of it, you really need to think about how much money can I afford to leave this person to care for my animal, to help facilitate that care.
Mm.
And then how can I legally do that to, as best, again, as best you can, to make sure that those wishes are done when I'm gone. And that's where the specific pet estate trusts, pet trusts come into play. You can leave gifts. Just an outright, I give Tommy $5,000 to care for my border collie, Gabriel.
Mm.
You can do a gift like that, but there's a lot of legal nuances, at least here, that, you know, come into play whether or not that is really the way to go. Mm. So that's where, at that point, that's where you need to get an attorney involved, you know, who knows your laws, who knows estate planning, and who doesn't laugh you out of the office.
Yes.
Because there are some attorneys, at least where I live, Nebraska, or smack dab in the middle of the U.S., we're a very agricultural-oriented state, a lot of cattle and a lot of corn.
Mm.
And there's still quite a few attorneys that say, you know, they kind of snicker if you say, I want a trust for my dog, because it's more of an agricultural, more of a rural mindset.
Yeah.
But you know, you're the client. You hire and fire the attorney, you know, no matter where you are. So if the attorney laughs you off and says you don't need to do that, well, there's plenty of attorneys out there.
Yes.
That's the time to go find another one who respects what you want to do.
Yeah.
And put it down. Put it down in writing. Get it solid, because the courts are slowly but surely here moving toward, you know, respecting that more and enforcing these things more and enacting statutes to support these kinds of concerns that a lot of citizens have today.
Mm.
So it's a little complicated. And then if you're incapacitated, if you're just laid up, you know, you get in a wreck and you have to spend some time in the hospital or whatever, having someone who can have what we call a power of attorney is also very important, not only for yourself, but also to make sure that your pets are cared for. And that's something that a lawyer can help you with as well, and you can make it very elaborate. You can let someone have basically all of your rights to conduct any kind of business. Or you can just say, I'm letting Susie has the right, if I cannot do it, Susie can go into my checking account and write checks and sign my name for me, as long as those checks are written out, that money is being spent for the care of my pets.
Mm.
So it can be as elaborate or as simple as possible. And that's a big help, especially for folks who are alone.
Yes.
You know, older folks and folks that live alone, having someone who can help you out that way. You know, you're coming back home. The animals don't need to go anywhere, but they may run out of dog food before you get back.
Yeah.
And somebody needs to run out and buy it. That way, those folks that are being nice enough to help you, you're not asking them to spend their own money, and then you'll pay them back later.
Mm.
They can actually be given the power to go in and spend your money for a very specific purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the other thing. So, you know, getting information down, talking with people, and really having those heart-to-heart talks, really looking at the situation, really looking at the potential relationship between those caretakers and your pets. I mean, those are simple things that anybody can do, and I highly, highly recommend that everybody, you know, do that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that, you know, have heard this before and stuff, they come out and say, you know, I didn't want to do it because it means I have to think about my own death.
Yeah.
And no one likes to do that.
Mm.
But a lot of them will come up and say, you know, I just feel so much better that I did it.
Yes.
I really thought through things. And then because we had this dialogue about our pets, then we moved on to other issues.
Mm.
And it kind of opened the conversation up for difficult topics about, you know, your personal care.
Yeah.
And your personal situation and that type of thing. So it really ends up serving a dual purpose.
Yeah.
But I would highly recommend everyone to do it.
Definitely. I mean, as you say, it is a subject that we shy away from, and it's not nice to think about, but you have to confront it because, as you say, you're giving your pet, your dog, your cat, a gift because you know, they're going to be well looked after if anything happens to you, and you've got to think about that for them.
Yes, yes, you have to because no one else will.
Mm.
And, you know, and unfortunately, you know, some of my friends that I've lost, it's been couples.
Yeah.
In one case, it was an entire family.
Oh, yeah.
So even though you may be married or you may have children,
yeah.
Again, it's a horrible thing to think about, but you have to think kind of above and beyond.
Yeah.
Go a couple of steps, find a couple people deep, and make those decisions because, you know, our pets are some of the most helpless, the most dependent beings that are in our lives.
Yeah.
And we have to take care of them. And it's also a gift to the people that we leave behind because we're answering questions for them. We're telling them, here's what we wanted.
Yeah.
And no one has to sit there and guess when they have all the other horrible emotions going on. They know.
She's absolutely right. It's not pleasant, but how pleasant would it be for our animals if we left them with no one knowing what to do with them? If we don't face up to it, they might have to. You can hear more from Dawn about the excellent Bonafide Dog Academy right after the news. The one absolutely unselfish friend that man can have in this selfish world, the one that never deserts him, the one that never proves ungrateful or treacherous, is his dog. He will kiss the hand that has no food to offer. He will lick the wounds and sores that come in encounter with the roughness of the world. When all other friends desert, he remains. George G. Vest. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. First on today's news, we have dog shows on opposite sides of the Atlantic.
In America, the National Dog Show, presented by Purina, is coming in November and will be hosted by the Kennel Club of Philadelphia. The event has become a television institution, generating a total audience approaching 20 million viewers each year for NBC's traditional Thanksgiving Day family entertainment special. Some 2,000 canines among 150-plus breeds and varieties will be competing for breed, group, and best-in-show honours. NBC announcers John O'Hurley and David Frey, plus a number of additional animal and human personalities, will be present for this showcase of some of the world's most beautiful, healthy dogs. For more information, check out www.philadogshow.com.
Meanwhile, in the UK, in October, politicians took a break from their usual duties to take part in the Westminster Dog of the Year competition, organised by Dogs Trust and the British Kennel Club. Dogs from all shades of the political spectrum were represented at what has become known as the canine equivalent of a general election. Much more than a mere beauty pageant, the Westminster Dog of the Year competition aims to find the nation's true top dog, based on the contestants' good deeds, winning personalities, and dogged devotion to their owner, and vice versa. This year's competition had a brand new class just for dogs belonging to Westminster political reporters, thus enabling the Hacks hounds to throw their leashes into the ring too. Also debuting this year was a class for best returning Westminster dog, allowing previous contestants the chance to rejoin the competition. The 2007 Dog of the Year is Max, whose owner, Member of Parliament Michael Hall, commented, "I'm absolutely delighted that Max has won the Westminster Dog of the Year show. He is a rescue crossbreed from Cheshire Dogs Home, and so I think he's done really well to win today. The serious message is all about responsible dog ownership, and I'm very proud that Max has played his part."
And on the subject of winning dogs, the four-legged stars of Oscar-winning film The Queen have taken top honours in London at Britain's first Fido Film Awards for canine cinematic excellence. Poppy, Anna, Alice, Oliver and Megan, the five corgis who appeared alongside Helen Mirren in the film about Queen Elizabeth II, were named Best Historical Hounds, and the corgis also took the ceremony's top accolade, Best in World. Of course, the Queen's love of corgis is well known. She has owned more than 30 of the breed during her 55-year reign.
And finally, for those of us with dogs less inclined to act and more inclined to act up, we have news of a website with a difference. Try dogproblems.com, used by dog owners and dog trainers internationally. Site creator Adam G. Katz says, "We have dog trainers at our site from over 23 different countries. You can ask a question to a dog obedience trainer in Bogota, Colombia, and then get input from dog behavior specialists in Germany, South Africa, and even Costa Rica to learn how similar their approach may be. Dogs are the same all over the world." Katz originally owned a dog training business in Los Angeles, California for 7 years before retiring to focus on his writing. He has sold over 90,000 copies of his dog training book worldwide, as well as videos and audio lectures on canine behavior that can now be downloaded from his website. Katz also offers free dog behavior help through his weekly Dog Training Tips email newsletter. The newsletter is unique in that it includes insights and training advice he's picked up from dog trainers internationally. To find out more, visit dogproblems.com.
And that's all from us on the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
First, you learn a new language, profanity. And second, you learn not to discipline your dogs when you're mad. And that's most of the time when you're training dogs. Lou Schultz, trainer of Alaskan Huskies. Now we return to our interview with Dawn Antoniak-Mitchell. Dawn is certainly a busy lady. Find out just how busy.
Now, your CV, I've been looking on your website, and your CV is amazing because you've had over 20 years of experience in dog training and dog-related activities in the Omaha area. Yeah, it says you've had extensive dog training experience in group settings in the shelter environment. You're an American Kennel Club rally and obedience judge, as well as a trial secretary. You and your Delta Society certified therapy dog, Lizzie B, visit paediatric patients, and you're active in the reading therapy program at Keene Memorial Library. You're a St. Hubert's Dog Sports obedience judge and representative. You're an Association of Pet Dog Trainers rally obedience representative. You compete in confirmation, obedience, agility tracking, go to ground, terrier trials, and rally with your dogs. And, I mean, it just goes on and on. You trained the first AKC rally title Parson Russell Terrier in the country and the first curly-coated retriever rally title dog at all three levels of AKC obedience competition. And it goes on and on. So, I mean, obviously, you are a fantastic trainer and you're very enthusiastic about what you do.
Yeah, my life has pretty much gone to the dogs completely.
Yeah, now so much so, you've started a Bonafide Dog Academy, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we are a training facility here that That's been my main focus for about the last year now.
Yeah, yeah. Now, just occasionally we come across places that I think, wow, I would love to live close enough that I could go to this, you know, this training place. Because you major on positive training methods. I mean, it sounds fantastic. And also, you really value and respect the bond between the handler and the dog, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons that my business partner, Cam Bexton, and I decided to take the plunge and do something totally new, because we are very unique. There's lots of training opportunities out there, but we weren't really happy with what we were seeing and what we were experiencing with our own dogs. So we decided to take the plunge and pretty much put our money, you know, where our mouths are, and set up a training facility. And we have just been overwhelmed in the positive response that we're getting from pet owners in the community. Also the support that we're getting from people who actually compete with their dogs. But our focus is bringing people in the door, you know, getting them excited about the possibilities that, you know, all the different activities they can enjoy with their dogs, how to train their dogs in a positive way that is not, you know, traumatic for the owner or the dog, and just to have fun. I mean, that's the point of having dogs. It should be fun.
Yeah.
And training and learning about dogs can be fun, and that's what we're all about.
Yes, yeah. Now, it says, if we can talk a bit about sort of the training opportunities you offer, because it says you go from sort of basic manners classes, but then, now this is really interesting, you do sort of happy herders and rollicking retrievers. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. What we decided to experiment with is breaking our basic pet manners classes down into more specific groupings of dogs. Because what we were finding is we'd have, for example, a lot of people come to us and say, I have a Labrador Retriever, and he wants to put everything in his mouth, and it's driving me nuts. Well, that's in part because it's a Labrador Retriever, and retrievers were bred to put things in their mouths.
Yes.
That's what they're supposed to do. And so what we were finding, or they would come and say, well, when my terrier sees a squirrel, it's like the rest of the world goes away. And that dog just locks on that squirrel, and I cease to exist.
Yeah.
Well, that's because it's a terrier. It's what they were bred to do. So we were finding that a lot of the behavioral questions that we're getting tend to stem from people not really understanding what they have in their dog. So we decided to try, and we started out actually with the terriers. I called it testy terriers. We really should have called it terrific terriers, because I personally, if I were a dog, I'd be a terrier. Mm. I think they're wonderful. But we tried a small group. We taught basic manners, but it was open to terriers and terrier mixes only. And then we had the chance to focus on some of those unique qualities that terriers bring to the table.
Mm.
You know, the reason we love them as well as get very frustrated with them. And we really got a positive response because pet owners, they were so much more willing to open up.
Yes.
You know, a Jack Russell Terrier you know, they're willing to talk about their Jack being a little naughty if there were other, you know, terrier owners in the room.
Yeah.
Whereas if that one terrier is with a whole bunch of well-behaved golden retrievers, they may not say, hey, guess what my dog does that I want to fix. So we're able to focus in. And then we also, in those classes, we bring in some things that are unique that those dogs will enjoy. So, for example, in our Happy Herders class, that's for herding breeds. It's taught by a wonderful trainer that we have here on staff. Her experience is with Shetland sheepdogs, and she does herding with her dogs. So she's arranged to bring in ducks the last night of class.
Oh, wow.
So these herding, and most of them are fairly young, but these are urban dogs in the middle of Omaha, you know.
Yeah.
They've never seen a duck other than flying over. So they're going to actually get the chance to experience seeing some ducks in a pen.
Yeah.
And let those instincts take over. And with the retrievers, we do a lot of retrieving games and things like that. So we've been really happy kind of bringing that in, and we find that our owners go away understanding more and appreciating more what their dog is really all about.
Yeah, yeah. That really is the key to living in harmony with your dog, isn't it? If you can understand what they were bred for, what they're being driven by, And then you can meet those needs better, and then everybody's happy.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And then, too, I think it takes some of the frustration out of the situation for the owner. Once they understand what the genes are telling their dogs to do, that their dog isn't being bad or naughty and their dog's not stupid. No, their dog is just a terrier, barking at a prey, or, you know, the lab is jumping up and grabbing at your arm because he's happy and he just instinctively wants something in his mouth. Once you can appreciate that, doesn't mean you have to like what they do, but you can understand it. Then you can get rid of the frustration and the emotion and move on to the training and the, you know, changing those behaviors.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, because I've done precisely what you say about sort of, you know, taking the emotion out. I've been there and sort of looking at my Labrador thinking, why are you doing this to me? Why? You know, as you say, if you can look at
exactly.
it, you know, more sort of, okay, you're not doing this to me. This is nothing personal. This is just how you are. And then you can tackle it much better.
Exactly. Mm,
yeah. Now, what's interesting as well is you don't just offer classes. You do offer seminars and lectures, don't you?
Yes, that's another thing that we really enjoy doing. We've done a number of short workshops, things to really focus in on people's questions, because sometimes they'll come in, they'll have a very well-behaved dog for everyday life, but, for example, next month we're offering a class on doorbell dilemmas. You know, the dog that goes off when it hears the doorbell ring.
Yeah.
And there are folks who, you know, their dog is very well-mannered. It just gets excited when it hears that doorbell ring. And that's really the only problem they have. And they're not willing to come to a six-week basic obedience class or pay for private instruction necessarily. They want answers to that one question. That's what they want. That's what they need.
Yeah.
So we try to bring in, you know, these short little workshops or four-week classes just focused on working on a reliable recall. That's a big one that, you know, people need. And in my opinion, the one most important thing you can teach your dog is to come when you call it.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially living in the city, because it's so easy, burst out the door, and before you know it, in the street, bad things can happen. And we're really getting the folks who say, but my dog does everything except come when called.
Mm.
We can say, great. You know, that's fine. You're happy with everything else. That's fine. You know, so let's come and how about signing up for this recall class? And that's what we're going to work on. But we always weave in relationship issues. You know, and if we see a dog, if the dog comes pulling its owner into the recall class, after class, we'll kind of take him aside and say, hey, you know, there's some things. If you want to work on this, we have some suggestions. We have some equipment options. You know, we can help you with that too,
yes.
You know, but they're here for the recall first and foremost, which, you know, we respect that, but we do have an opportunity to open up. And then what we find is we're building lifelong customers.
Yes.
You know, we're building people who come back, they get interested, they get excited about their dogs, they're excited about the possibilities. And now they look at their dog in a totally different way. So then they'll come back and they'll take a class on polite leash manners.
Yes.
After we get them hooked, you know, and they enjoy the recall, and we also strive to have a very relaxed, informal, conversational class format, because we found that really lacking. The classes are small, and anybody can throw up their hand at any time and say, "Hey, I have a question," and that really sucks people in. And then you get them working on all of the things that they thought they were satisfied with. But they were really only satisfied with it because they didn't know how to change it.
To find out more about Dawn and the brilliant Bonafide Dog Academy, I do wish I lived near enough to go there. Check out bonafidedogacademy.com. And in a few weeks' time, you can hear Dawn's business partner, Cam, the co-owner of the academy, giving some training advice about exercising young dogs. Ki miamat, amet et canem miam. Love me, love my dog. St. Bernard.
And now for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime. Today I have some great websites for you to explore. If you like looking at photographs of beautiful dogs, then try out www.adog.co.uk. Here you'll find some lovely and fun photos. Not only that, there are over 100 photo jigsaws to have a go at. The jigsaws vary in difficulty, so you can take it easy or really tax your brain. Another great site I've discovered is giveusahome.com. I like the fun section here where there are games, jokes, downloads, competitions and more. The games include simple ones for younger children as well as some for those of us who are older. Another feature I loved was the How Do I Become a Vet section, which has lots of links to follow up. If you're a good writer, you can send in a story or a poem about your dog, and there is also articles and lots of information about dogs and other pets. If you come across a fun website you'd like to share with others, let me know. Also, if you enjoy the jokes at the very end of Dogcast Radio, you could send us a joke. You can either email it to us and I'll read it out, or better still, record your joke and send it in to us, or leave a message on one of our phone numbers. Till next time, have fun with your dogs and make sure your dog has fun with you.
Dogs are wise. They crawl away into a quiet corner and lick their wounds and do not rejoin the world until they are whole once more. Agatha Christie. I noticed recently in Beverly Cuddy's blog an appeal for help. Beverly is the editor and publisher of UK dog magazine Dogs Today, but it was in her capacity as chairman of Tailwaggers, a trust which helps needy dog and cat owners in meeting the cost of veterinary bills, that she heard about the plight of Caroline and her Tibetan terrier, Harry. Caroline had fled from domestic violence, and though a housing project had changed their rules to allow Harry to live with her, Caroline was struggling to meet the costs she had to. The appeal was for anyone who could help supply dog food. Well, the only actual dog food manufacturer I have ever personally met is Liz Nuttall from Organipets. This company has a terrific story behind their excellent products. You can hear about it in episode 47 of Dogcast Radio. So I put Beverly and Liz in touch, and it turned out really well. Liz was very happy to help, knowing how devastating domestic violence can be. And Harry is now dining on Organipets free of charge for as long as is necessary. Do check out Beverly's blog for some lovely photos of Caroline and Harry, who are able to stay together thanks to the Housing Association and dog lovers working together. It's a happy ending, which is really a happy beginning, but it does show what we can achieve when we work together. We've brought out a new website you might want to check out if you'd like to see some videos of dogs. AllDogVideos.com contains videos that really feature dogs and are family friendly. If you search on YouTube for dog, the results can be irrelevant and unsuitable. We have selected videos that vary from informative to funny to downright cute for you to view. You can register and leave comments about the videos, and the comments are approved before they go onto the site to continue the family friendly environment. So take a look at AllDogVideos.com. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
A Great Dane walked into a bar and said, "I'll have a Coke and a packet of chips, please." The barman said, "Why the big pause?"